Welcome to the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. This is number 184 in our continuing series of Grizzly Bear Egg Cafes.
And today's main focus will be the new hit television show, Dallas. Do you have your notes ready?
Do I have my notes ready? Other than the article that you sent me that I read one paragraph of?
Exactly.
I mean, if those are my notes, then yes, I'm miserable.
I just wanted to cut you off and get right to the heart of the matter, because this is the show that's sweeping the nation. I mean,
is it?
Everyone's been clamoring for this. I mean, haven't you been hearing about it? When you go to your Starbucks, people asking about, are you watching the new JR? Are you watching the new Oil Men of Texas?
Has it begun?
Yeah, I didn't know it started until yesterday. You know, my wife, she wants to watch it. She used to watch the original Dallas. I used to watch part of it, but I think my parents would sort of whisk me off to bed because it was late. I think it came on at like 10 or something. But it followed, right. I used to watch, Dukes of Hazzard.
Yes.
It was like a Thursday night thing, right? So it followed Dukes of Hazzard. I think at the time it was CBS, right?
I would think so.
Yeah. And so it followed Dukes of Hazzard, and I would watch the opening. And, of course, the theme song, which we just played here at the top of the show, is iconic. And I used to play that in band. I remember I would, I had my saxophone, and I would play it like crazy. I wanted to play that when we had our big concert, and that was one of our songs we would play.
Clayton was a one-man band. He wants
right.
to know that. It was just a long sax solo.
I love that. I love that theme song.
CBS had a number of, in our childhood, the early to mid-80s, they had a lot of programs that, to me, my feeling about them was that they were just like soap operas for senior citizens. And Dallas, Falcon's Crest, and Dynasty were sort of those. That was my feeling. And I realized that they were considered just, primetime dramas. But, like, to me, something about them, I just felt like these are like soap operas for old people.
Yeah, I think they kind of were, but I feel like the audience, 84 million people tuned in to see who shot JR. Mm-hmm. That's no slouch.
That was a huge cliffhanger in television history.
Yeah. So now the new show is back. Dallas is back. This new reboot, and got to meet the cast they were in. It's on TNT, by the way, so it's not on CBS this time. Right. But, Larry Hagman, of course, and Patrick Duffy. They're still sort of front and center in this show, but now they have like their kids are in it.
Right. Are they grandkids?
Are they the grandkids? Yeah.
The great grandkids? Is that what they are?
No. They probably are great grandkids.
Right. Larry Hagman's 107, isn't he?
Right. Yeah. And Patrick Duffy, like in the show, I think he has cancer. Like that's the prem. Like you see in the first episode, he's got like he's meeting with the doctor because I think he has cancer. I don't know how long they're going to keep these guys around, the older guys. They probably will just keep them around long enough to usher in the new crew. Mm-hmm. But it's like the young kids who are sort of the young upstarts. And when you see the cast, right, when you see this family, the Ewing family, you're like, no family is that good looking. Mm-hmm. Like all the people that play, like Julie Gonzalez as Rebecca Stutter, Jordana Brewster as Elena Ramos, Jesse Metcalf is Christopher Ewing, and then Josh Henderson. Like, they're all, like, right out of central casting, They're not oilmen. I don't buy that. I don't buy that for a second.
So, just so we're clear, your mental stereotype of oil people, to be politically correct, is that they're not attractive.
Well, yeah, or that they're men.
I see.
Right, by the definition of oilmen,
adjust it to oil people so as not to offend all the oil women out there.
Yeah, what's this with you starting to not trying to offend people? I don't understand that. Is it like a New Year's resolution?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mid-year resolution, I thought. I'm going to refer to them as oil people. and then later they'll feud with the Sleestak. I don't know anything about this, but do you remember, was it 90210 or Melrose Place, like a couple years ago, they attempted to relaunch it, and they got like half a season out of the bag, and that was it, Here's all the, they did the same thing, it must have been Melrose Place, right? Like Heather Locklear was kind of in the periphery of it, like just enough that it's supposed to be tied to the old thing, and then...
Right, like she just walks by the building, she's like, I used to live there, I used to live here in Melrose Place. And they're like, she was just – that was all over the commercials, right? It was just like Heather Locklear in Melrose Place Part 2, She just came by to pick up her safety or her deposit check from the apartment complex.
Right.
That's the only appearance in the episode. My security deposit.
So now there's just one episode of Dallas out, the new Dallas?
Yeah, I think it's on demand, so the first episode is out. I think I checked on iTunes, though, because we were trying to do an on-demand search because my wife wanted to watch it. And look, it looked entertaining, I have to admit. It's in sort of that sort of cheesy way you would watch reality television. Like the lead guy, Christopher Ewing, he's like the young punk kid who like speaks French, and he's meeting with some older oil tycoons and
oil people,
and he's like he's working on this new methane rock style of gas, and that he's like pioneered, and he's trying to beat the Chinese to their own game of getting it out of the ground. And these guys are like, look, you know, we'll give you this amount of money for this, but we're not going any higher on that. And then this girl walks up and he starts speaking French to her. So it's like this new era in Texas. You know, he's like a bratty kid. Mm-hmm. But he plays it. He plays it kind of as well as like JR played, you know, JR did. You know, he's like that. He's just the bad boy. You know, you kind of want to like him. So it looked all right. I mean, it looks just like schlocky TV fun. But, you know, the article that I sent you and we were talking about, it's interesting for the summer, right? Because typically you didn't get any new shows in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And now it seems like this is a great place to really make some traction by putting out a show in the summer like this because, you know, look, there are not too many shows in production, and if you can get one or two that really take off, you know, they may pull them and rotate them into a fall schedule. I know that they've had some success with some different shows doing that, so it's interesting to see what how many episodes here, too. The first one was Changing of the Guard. The second one is Hedging Your Bets. So there's two episodes out now on the new Ewing family.
Yeah, typically, you know, new programs, they come on in the fall. All the new ones usually launch around back to school time. And then right after the holidays, sometimes there are shows which are, I don't know if the term mid-season replacement is still used for them. That's certainly the case with a lot of them that come on right after the holiday break or whatever. But during the summer months, there's very little new programming. You know, now there's always new episodes of A Current Affair. I stay up with that.
Right.
And but that's about it. So it's that and the new Dallas.
Does Current Affair ever have reruns?
No, it's current.
Right, but I mean, somebody has to take a vacation.
So a reran affair? Who would watch that?
Yeah. Or like What's Happening? What's Happening Now? It wouldn't be What's Happening
Now. There is a real generational divide, you know, especially because, you know, I'm the head trainer at Chikara Wrestle Factory, and there's always like a wave of like fresh out of college or fresh out of high school people around this time that come through the Wrestle Factory. You know, they've just finished a phase of their schooling and they want to give professional wrestling a try. And I become more and more, as the years go on, more acutely aware of the burgeoning generation gap. Because everyone – this is really like the thing that separates the men from the boys. I'll make a reference to What's Happening. Mm-hmm. And there's an ever-growing majority of people who don't know what's happening is.
Right.
And that wounds me. It wounds me. In the same sense that, like, when you talk about the Dukes of Hazzard and they're like, oh, yeah, like Johnny Knoxville and no. Right.
No, not at all.
No, I'm not talking about that, yeah, whatsoever. Like, you don't know what I'm talking about with the fake Dukes?
So, like, what kind of, like, references do you make to what's happening? Like, you're going to, like, flips a chair around and sits on it backwards?
Somebody comes into practice with an afro pick and says, hey, hey, hey.
Right.
No. Usually this is how it comes out because I don't know why. I use this reference more times than you would think, is that I analogize myself with Rerun chasing after the pickup truck as the end credits are playing.
Right.
And you remember like Raj and Dwayne Wayne, or just Dwayne, I guess. Dwayne Wayne was from a different world, wasn't he? Are like waving to Rerun, like, come on, jump in the back of the pickup truck. And Rerun can't catch the pickup truck. But you see, as the end credits are ending, that the pickup truck has stopped at a stop sign. And you're left to infer from this, although it's not shown to you, that he does actually get the ride.
Right. Yeah, you think that he gets on there. They slow down just enough so he gets on. Come on, Rerun, get on board.
Ah, Fred Berry, where are you now? He's alive, right? Fred Berry?
I think so, yeah. You know who's not alive? Rodney King.
Rodney King is not alive. And, you know, he was the headliner of two of my favorite seasons of Celebrity Sober House.
Really?
Yeah, Celebrity Rehab with Dr. Drew, and then the spinoff Sober House.
He had a drinking issue, right? And then they found him at the bottom of the pool this weekend on Father's Day.
Right, yeah. That's a rough way to go.
Yeah.
If you don't know his story, Rodney King, he was famous, from the L.A. riots era when, correct me if I'm wrong, like, he had the Royal Bazumbas beat out of him by the LAPD. Is that right?
Sure. Yeah. And then, of course, you remember the head of the LAPD, I think, was it Gates? I forget his first name.
Bill Gates, yep.
Yeah. Went on to leave the LAPD and form Microsoft. It's a little known
story.
That's right.
And then his deputy, a lot of times when this happens, when the head of a police department leaves, you know, the deputy or the vice sheriff, as he's known, takes over. But there was no vice sheriff of the LAPD because of the way their infrastructure was organized. And the next guy in the hierarchy of the administration there was Stephen Hawking.
Right. So it was really interesting. I mean, these guys, it's like 6 degrees of separation from genius at the LAPD department. So when Gates left on a cloud of controversy, obviously, with the riots and everything that unfolded there.
And, of course, a lot of the viruses, you know, people weren't happy about that.
Right. Yeah, and Clippy, the paperclip, they used to come out and offer you help.
Yeah, people were not happy about that. They just said, leave him in the cruiser.
Right.
Clippy, I don't think he's going to help with the speeding violation.
What's weird is if you watch that Rodney King beating video, you can see Clippy off camera rooting them on.
Right. And that was really the paperclip that broke the camel's back. Now, around the exact same time, I don't know if you remember this, there was also a truck driver, another guy, who was pulled out of his cabin, hit in the face with a brick.
Reginald Denny
was hit in the face with a brick.
Yeah, a group of thugs, like, pulled him out of his cab of his truck, and beat him. They fractured his skull.
Right.
They smashed his jaw. I mean, he was almost dead.
They messed up his eyebrows.
His eyeball fell out of its socket.
Yep.
Now, that's no joke. And then they had to rebuild his face and put his eyeball back in.
Yeah. You know who else was rebuilt, Clayton? RoboCop.
Right. And he went on to a successful – is that RoboCop film still – they're working on that, aren't they?
He did go on to a successful career in law enforcement. Indeed, he did, across 3 movies, an animated series, and 2 different comic books. And then, you know, he had a couple television series as well after that. That you and I somehow never saw, but RoboCop. Yeah, let's talk about this for just a second here. The 1987 film, and perhaps it was successful at the box office, but not like a super smash success. But it really took on like a life of its own. Like RoboCop became a pop culture phenomenon, even though he was not like a blockbuster at the box office, because I don't know, there was something really distinct about RoboCop, right? The way he moved, the sounds that he made influenced many home movies that Clayton and I made. RoboCop was a phenomenon. Now, here we are, right, 25 years later, and the RoboCop reboot, it's a remake of the original, is, I guess it's something past pre-production. It must be. And here, to give you a sense of the timeline, the first rumors about this remake of RoboCop were discussed in Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe episode number 1.
Really?
That's how long ago we heard about this.
God.
So here we are almost 4 years later. And I don't know, I haven't seen one teaser, I haven't seen one poster for this. Like, it's still got to be at least next summer away.
Did we also talk about the Justice League movie in episode 1? Because
no, we didn't. But we did talk about the RoboCop reboot. Yeah, now the Justice League movie, which has nothing to do with Bill Gates, Stephen Hawking, Rodney King, or Reginald Denny. The Justice League movie, as you might know, there's been some talk this past week
about there has. Did we talk about this on the show? I don't think we did. Did we? Oh yeah, we did. No. 2 weeks ago or no?
I don't know. But let me tell you this. We're going to talk about the Justice League movie in a second. But I want to implore you, loyal eggheads, we really do need your help. We need you to go over to an Apple-controlled thing called iTunes, which I know is where the devil lives. I want you to go to iTunes, and I want you to leave us a 5-star review. We got a great review just since we recorded last. We got a great 5-star review that called this show amazing, a great podcast. I never miss an episode. Try it. You'll love it. Even if you don't like 80s music or comic books, I don't, but I love this podcast. It's wacky and funny. It's like listening to old friends talk. Thanks, Chris, for dropping that off. You could be the next one to leave us a super awesome review in iTunes, just like Chris did, or The Lead 44, or Mokes McKenzie did, or Wolfie 54, or any of the other folks that left us a review over there. We need your five-star reviews. Please go over there and leave it with incredible hyperbole and praise.
Yeah, thank you so much for your five-star reviews. Also, check out some of our other great shows here at grizzlyproductions.tv. We've got the weekly Long Box, a great comic book show that I'm sure you would love if you're into comic books. They dive really deeply into all the big books of the week. That show has really taken off. So check out the weekly Long Box as well. And also, why don't we just take a moment here and thank one of our show sponsors this week, our friends over at Cobra, makers of the iRadar and the Cobra Tag System. Mike, why don't you tell them, you're on the road quite a bit, how awesome the Cobra iRadar is and what you can do with your smartphone as you're driving, Android, BlackBerry, or even iOS device.
That's right. This Cobra iRadar system is going to pair via Bluetooth with your smartphone device so that you get up-to-date driving hazard information. I'm talking about all the different types of radar technology that might be out there to check the speed of your car. I'm talking about the camera systems that are used at red lights now to catch you if you blow through a red light. That just is the tip of the iceberg when it comes to this system. And you might think to yourself, well, I'm not somebody that speeds, right? Or I'm not the kind of person that on occasion kind of pushes it through a yellow light in the hopes and doesn't turn red as I'm in the middle of the intersection. Hey, believe me, I hear what you're saying, but that is not necessarily the point of the Cobra iRadar system, because in my opinion, the point of this fantastic technological innovation is simply to make you a safer, more alert driver. This is good for you. It's good for anybody that rides with you. If you take your family on the road with you, you're traveling with little ones, and for the sake of every other motorist out there, you will find yourself becoming so much more aware of everything going on around you. And in its own weird way, it's a good companion when you're traveling alone. The Cobra iRadar system, I guarantee you, give it a try. It's one of those inventions out there that you think, I don't know that I need that. And then once you start using it, you say, I don't know how I ever got by without it. You can find out more about this over at Cobra.com. They've set up a site over there just for the iRadar. It's got a demo video and some other information. You can go online and buy one right now. I know that they're discounted in price right now over at Amazon.com if you look for the Cobra iRadar system there.
Indeed. I should also mention the trending show here at Grizzly Productions that you – that Mike
– What's that?
That Mike hosts along with Natalie.
The hostess.
And they run down the biggest trends of the week on the internet. It's always funny. It's always entertaining. So check it out. The trending show. I just got an email just wondering how the trending show is doing. Obviously, post Natalie having a baby.
Right. Poorly. It's doing poorly.
Bruce wanted to know what happened to the trending show. They took a week or so off with maternity leave, so they'll be back very, very soon. Yes, everything is great with a new baby. I'm a big fan. So
you're a big fan of the new baby, huh?
Yeah. Thanks, Bruce. Thanks for being a big fan of the new baby. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I'm glad we got that information. Hey, so let's talk about the Justice League, shall we?
Yes, let's indeed.
So some time ago, probably more than 100 episodes ago on the Grizz, to be sure, we talked a little bit about the Justice League of America, an ensemble piece that Warner Brothers, the parent company of DC Comics, was looking to do. And it even had gone into pre-production in New Zealand. They were getting ready, all the stuff that happens before principal photography begins, I guess, is technically referred to as pre-production, wouldn't you say, Mr. Morris?
Yeah.
So, we're also going to talk about the Avengers here because I want to kind of compare and contrast some things. In the wake of the massive success worldwide of the Avengers, Warner Brothers came out and said that, yes, we are getting back to work on the Justice League movie. Now tell me, did you see the same thing that I saw where an executive from Warner Brothers said they're going to cast all unknowns as the Justice League? They are not going to attempt to retain the current Superman actor or Christian Bale as Batman. They're going to start over again from scratch. Did you see that?
I did not. Now I'm looking at it, and it makes little sense to me.
Agreed. This is dumb.
I mean, look, the Green Lantern film was weak, mm-hmm. but Ryan Reynolds as Hal Jordan, I think, was a smart move. Now they just have to make the film better. They have to give him better lines to read.
Like, he did have some personality.
Right.
You know, like, you can't make that knock against him. Like I kind of remember seeing two good examples of this. One, the first Punisher movie with Thomas Jane, and two, Daredevil with Ben Affleck. Those guys came across so lifeless and so wooden. And whether you like Ryan Reynolds or not, you think he's the greatest actor or not, whatever, he at least brought some personality to the role. But to not keep any of these established players, I think, is a foolish move.
Yeah, especially for Superman, right? Because here we're going to see perhaps the success of the Superman – what is it called, Superman?
It's just called the Man of Steel.
Man of Steel with was Thomas Cavill playing right. Superman, the British guy.
Yep.
So obviously they're looking at probably like a three-film franchise for that, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. They don't try to enter into those lightly, and they're really hoping and pinning their hopes and dreams on the fact that they're going to have more than one Superman film. So correct me if I'm wrong, but if this ends up being a 2014 or at the earliest 2015 release for the Justice League, then basically you're going to be up against perhaps a Superman 2 with Thomas Cavill, but you're going to have a separate Superman concurrently in Justice League.
Right. I had a conversation, a friend and a peer of mine was moving from this general area. He's moving to upstate New York, and I had a chance to have dinner with him on Friday. And we were talking about something along these exact same lines, actually, about that idea and the fact that Marvel, in my opinion, has really gotten this thing right. And, you know, they've even gone on to brand this thing, what they're calling the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Hmm. They're now launching new comics that match the movie continuities of their characters. So that if you only really know the movie versions, you can pick these books up and you're right along with them. You know, certainly it was jarring back in the day, if you watched something on TV, whether it was, you know, like Batman the Animated Series, and then you picked up, you know, at the same time Batman the Animated Series was on the air, was when they did that whole bit where Bane broke Batman's back and Azrael took over, wore that horrible armor. Like, if you picked up a Batman book from that era because you loved Batman the Animated Series, you'd be baffled as to what the heck is going on.
Right.
Like, you wouldn't have a clue. Marvel really took their time building to the Avengers, right? They gave everybody their own film first. There was, you know, they don't consider it part of the Avengers Marvel overarching thing, that first Hulk movie by Ang Lee. They don't consider that to be part of the story. So the two Iron Man films they do, Cap, the first Avenger, Thor, and The Incredible Hulk, the one with Edward Norton, all five of those movies were used to set the stage for the Avengers coming so that you understood who the players were, right? Now, it'd be impossible to think of anyone other than Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark, right?
Right, exactly.
So the fear in this, of course, is that the movie studio or Warner Brothers or somebody is going to screw it up, right? And how many episodes of The Grizz are we talking about exactly that? As we're anticipating the next superhero film, you know, with bated breath, our overwhelming concern is always, are they going to screw it up? Because right. We went and sat through Superman 3 and 4. We went and saw, you know, The Punisher with Dolph Lundgren. We saw the J.D. Salinger direct-to-video. Is J.D. Salinger the father, or is Matt Salinger the father? I always get that wrong. Who's the author?
J.D. Salinger is the author.
J.D. Salinger is the father. He is the author. I always get them juxtaposed. Matt Salinger is the son, who was the actor that played Captain America in the direct-to-video 1990 Cap film.
Right.
We've seen these horrible, horrible superhero movies where they just get everything wrong. And this Justice League movie kind of has that onus on it already, because right after pre-production in New Zealand was stopped a couple years ago, the script they were working from was leaked. And in the movie, they kill the Flash. So, you know, even going into the Avengers, that was part of our concern, right? Because Hawkeye, who is our favorite of the batch, he doesn't have powers, right? He's not inside of a suit of armor. He's not immortal. He'd be an easy one to kill off if they wanted to.
Who is this?
But luckily, Hawkeye.
Yeah.
But luckily, Marvel really took their time. They really took tremendous care in ushering this thing to the screen, and they gave us the characters, and they gave them to us with a certain reverence, and that's exactly what we wanted. And now the Avengers, the version that's currently in theaters, has become the third biggest film grossing film worldwide. And now, have you heard the talk about the re-release?
The re-release of The Avengers?
Yes.
No, they're going to bring it back again?
There is talk that Marvel and Disney think that they can bump this thing all the way to the top, and that they are going to add back in the 32 minutes that were cut by Joss Whedon and release a director's cut of The Avengers to theaters by Christmas.
I'd go see it.
Absolutely. And they did say this. They said almost they said the majority of the cut footage is stuff surrounding Captain America, which I would definitely like to see.
Yeah, you have to wonder. I mean, look, it's got like 92% still on Rotten Tomatoes. This thing is a beast. I mean, for a film to have that high of a box office take and to have its percentage on Rotten Tomatoes and sort of crowdsourced ratings information not kind of go down, you know, the 80s maybe. Because you saw that with The Dark Knight, right? Mm-hmm. When The Dark Knight came out, it was like 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah. People were saying that this was like Citizen Kane level of filmmaking. I remember that the early reviews from critics, I remember the front page of Drudge, the Drudge Report had like greatest film of all time, question mark. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, when the masses start to go see it, it moderates a bit, you know, it gets a little bit more more real, I guess. But yeah, The Avengers still holding strong at 92%. And I would go see that. 32 minutes is a compelling enough reason, but it was already 2.5 hours.
Right. So it would come in at 3 hours, 5 minutes.
Wow.
With the extra footage put back in.
But my God, who wouldn't go see that? And my wife and I were talking about the other night. We're like, because we're at my parents' house, we're like, hey, we want to go to the theater and see a movie tonight because we got, you know, built-in babysitters. We're like, what should we go see? And she jumped on Flixster to look. And we're like, God, there's really nothing that we want to see right now. Like, what are we going to go see, that Rock of Ages? Or we're like, let's go see The Avengers again. Mm-hmm. So I would see it a third time, even if there was that much cool stuff added back in.
Right. Yeah. I think so. You take all this, you know, obviously it's been done with a great deal of care, and it's been met with overwhelming success. So the timing of this Justice League announcement is no surprise, but I think it would be a major blunder to at least not make the effort to include the existing Superman, you know, the existing Batman actor, whether you could get them to agree or not, and Ryan Reynolds' Green Lantern.
Is there a licensing issue? You're always up on the licensing. So is there in this an issue between all of the different film franchises that they can't have bleed over into the actor? No, because I guess it wouldn't be, right? It would be the character, not the actor.
Yes. You know, unless they had like a contract to a studio, you know, like Tom Cruise does. But I don't think that's true of any of the people in question here. So My feeling is, one, you know, DC has far less the successful track record at the box office than does Marvel. You know, I think more times than not, they get Batman right, and everybody else, good luck. Good luck to you, Swamp Thing, Catwoman, you know, like, they just don't get it right a lot of the time. And even Superman Returns, which, well, there were elements of that I liked. Generally, it's not well remembered or well reviewed. And it's not one of the great Superman or superhero films by any stretch of the imagination. So there's definitely the concern there that, like, maybe DC can't get it done. Knowing nothing more about it, if someone were to say to me, like, do I think that they could do the Justice League as well as they do the Avengers? No, I don't. DC just doesn't have that type of track record. And they just haven't demonstrated that type of consistency. Now, I would be intrigued, because have you seen, especially from the recent licensing expo and everything else, that they've done the full reveal on the Superman costume now? You've been able to see it in great detail.
Right.
And it looks like some kind of weird chainmail. Mm-hmm. Like, I hate it. I just hate it.
And it's dark.
Right. All the colors are muted, of course, right? Like, so would you get that Superman, or would you get something closer to the Christopher Reeve? Would you get, you know, a Batman that's more akin to the Nolan version, or one that's maybe more like Batman the Brave and the Bold? Like, what are you going to end up getting?
Good questions. And this is why I think there's a really good article that I found that I wanted to bring up. 5 problems facing the Justice League movie. Mm-hmm. And I like this. So Will Beale is going to be delivering the script. Of course, he's the Mark Millar, who's with who did Kick-Ass. Mm-hmm. He's also supporting the project.
Right. Well, he's done a lot of stuff in comic books over the years.
Yeah, of course. And apparently it's going to be a dark interpretation.
Because that's what we want for the Justice League, right? Like, we don't want bright primary colors out there, right? Like, we want them hidden in the shadows like they're the X-Men.
Right. I don't know of a dark interpretation of the Justice League, right? Mm-hmm. My interpretation of the Justice League is light, is like the Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
You can then have individual films that are a little bit darker, but you don't. You know, I mean, Iron Man. I mean, but so, you know, the Avengers is light. You want light. You know, and you want with the Justice League, you want Superman, the Flash, you want Wonder Woman out there in daylight, just like the Avengers,
yes.
You know, that's what they are. So, you know, I obviously, except for the individual films themselves, Batman and so forth, maybe Martian Manhunter, if they did something like that. So the questions that this article raises are interesting. So number one, the problem facing the movie is Batman, The Dark Knight Rises, again, as they put it, that everyone's, you know, just sitting on edge waiting to go see The Dark Knight Rises. It's one of the most anticipated films of the summer. Obviously, the success of Christopher Nolan in doing this. So now if DC and then Will Beal are planning on essentially rebooting Batman for the Justice League film, is there going to be an adverse reaction to suddenly shifting away from this tonal direction that The Dark Knight has seen, given Nolan's interpretation as he concludes this with this monumental Dark Knight Rises film, right? Mm-hmm. Suddenly, are we going to move to a Joel Schumacher-y kind of, you know, interpretation of Batman, or, you know, or is it Tim Burton style? What is it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, does it become a caricature again? What happens? So that's one issue. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that's really valid, and you know, despite the fact that Superman might play as if he is, you know, the front man for DC, so to speak, the reality is Batman's the mover and shaker. You know, he's got the track record. You know, he's been interpreted into more forms of media than any other fictional superhero out there. And you can look across anything. I mean, you go back decades. You can talk about guys that were popular in years past from Tarzan to Dick Tracy, Zorro, those types of characters, far more than Superman, far more than any of the Marvel characters. Batman exists out there in a bigger way than any other superhero. So you've got to get him right, and you've got to put him front and center. You can't get around that, right? You can't have Batman show up in the last 5 minutes of the Justice League movie.
Number two on this list, Green Lantern. How are they going to do Green Lantern? You know, it was really a dismal origin story, the first out of the gate for Green Lantern. And it wasn't really, you know, even though they had already put in place a sequel, it was sort of like they're like, oh, we like this thing so much, we're going to plan for a sequel before they released it. But it's not really begging for a sequel. Like, I don't feel like I want to go see a sequel to that film.
Right.
So they have that big challenge. You know, are you going to bring Green Lantern into the film? But apparently they're saying that they're going to reboot that franchise again. And do away with the Ryan Reynolds version, sort of like the Hulk, you know, once and done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're done with Ryan Reynolds as Green Lantern. Those are some of the rumors out there. We're going to reboot it again and do it right this time. But again, that's risky because, you know, people have short memories, you know. People have long memories. And if they're going to see another Green Lantern film very, very soon before the Justice League film, you better do it right. I mean, you're putting up a lot of money taking a gamble on a character in an effort to make it pay off in the Justice League. So that's number two on their list.
Mm-hmm.
Superman, Nerves of Steel. Take the various attempts to bring Superman back to the big screen. For example, Superman Returns has to be one of the most mediocre and downright dull superhero movie experiences of recent times. I agree with that. Dull is the best way to describe it.
Mm-hmm.
So Zack Snyder has a heck of a job bringing the Man of Steel back up to scratch with the aptly titled Man of Steel next summer. If Snyder does get the reboot right, they say, then there's a good chance that the signs for a Justice League film could start becoming far more positive. But there's just one problem. What if he gets it wrong?
Mm-hmm.
You know, bearing in mind that the director's last effort, Sucker Punch, wasn't exactly a hit. And if it's not this superhero installment, you know, if it's not a surefire hit, and again, if it doesn't go well, DC Entertainment are perhaps in an uncomfortable position of having to reinvent again, sort of like, you know, Green Lantern. another version of Superman. But all of this begs the question, right? Are you going to bring back all of these characters, trying really to put all your eggs in this one basket, right? Hoping to have a successful Man of Steel film, and then hoping to have a successful Green Lantern film again. And then you're not going to use any of those characters that you had a success with in this new Justice League film.
Right. If they find an actor that really clicks in one version but not the other, it's like it sets the other film up to fail. You know, if people are really enamored, let's say, like, whatever, they find some new guy to be Green Lantern, and then they make a solo Green Lantern film without that actor, you know, like, they've just set themselves up to fail.
And they got to do Flash.
I think the whole thing, as much as I want to see it, I want to see it done right. And my fear is that, of course, they just won't get it right. And if that's going to be the case, then I'd rather not see it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, what about The Flash, right? You haven't told these origin stories yet. And will audiences care enough about those characters, like The Flash, Aquaman, Martian Manhunter, these sort of peripheral characters?
Because Martian Manhunter's boring. He's one of my least favorite DC characters. Yeah, I believe right now he's dead in the books. And just leave him that way. But there definitely are folks out there that would say that, you know, any classic incarnation of the Justice League needs to have him in it. You know, there are people that write – there are writers out there that have sort of framed him as like the heart and soul of the Justice League, the Martian Manhunter. And, you know, for those of us like the generation that Clayton and I belong to, because he was not made part of the Super Friends or the animated versions of the Justice League that we grew up with, he's forgettable to us. You know, the Martian Manhunter was never part of any version of the Super Friends, whereas someone who maybe is less integral to some versions of it, like Aquaman, because we grew up with Aquaman on the Super Friends, to me, you don't do Justice League without Aquaman. You have to have him.
Right.
But I could do without the Martian Manhunter.
Right. I think you could excise him from the process. But then again, you know, Wonder Woman, you know, I think she needs – we definitely need to have Wonder Woman in there. And, of course, there's been some attempt to bring her to the small screen in that television show that then didn't get picked up. I mean, they were shooting the pilot. You know, they had the actress. They had everything going. They had the scripts. No one picked it up. It's gone.
Yep. And, you know, Joss Whedon was on that project for a while. When they first started reworking Wonder Woman, he was attached to it. And he even said in an interview he gave relating to this, you know, they were talking to him about the Avengers first and foremost, but then brought up the idea of DC doing the Justice League, that these two major super teams would finally be brought to movie screens everywhere. And he said, I don't envy the people trying to make Justice League because the DC characters are so outdated. That's your biggest hurdle right out of the gate is making them relevant to current audiences, you know. And he has some firsthand experience because he worked on that Wonder Woman reboot, which it never ended up being a movie at all. As Clayton said, it was a television pilot starring like an actress from Friday Night Lights or something. You know, they picked some flavor of the month actress to play Wonder Woman, and the thing flopped. So
yeah,
I'm pessimistic. Not that it'll be made, but pessimistic that it'll be made well. But something else relating to DC that just came out in the last week is the same licensing expo where the really detailed look at the Superman suit was broadcast online and everywhere else. I'm sure you saw this is like the most long-awaited bit of news about the Batman television series.
Yes. Oh, boy. I mean, I caught wind of this, I think, actually from one of our listeners, I think, had tweeted us, and I couldn't believe it. The Batman 60s television show finally to be released. Oh, no, they figured out the rights to it.
That's right. Yeah. They've not said that they're going to release it to DVD yet, although that would certainly seem to be a logical conclusion to draw, but that materials, merchandise, and licensing stuff based on the television series will finally be possible for the first time since the 1960s.
Like Batmobile cars. You could get a few things, like I think Mattel or somebody had like the die-cast cars that you could get like at the Target, sure. You know, stuff like that.
The division of things was that the rights related to the Batman movie were always very clear, but the television series very muddled. So anything that could be described as, you know, part of the movie That, because that, you know, that classic Batmobile was in the movie. So that Batcopter was in the movie. That's why Hot Wheels and Matchbox were able to get a license to do those. If you ever see posters or images, you know, like that, that are sold from 60s Batman stuff, those are images taken or related to the movie.
Right.
Not from the television series.
They're never from the television series.
Right. And that has finally – somehow they figured it out. You know, it only took them 50 years. They finally managed to figure all of that out. So starting next year – I don't think this calendar year there's anything, but starting next year, merchandise and licensing pertaining to the 60s Batman television series will finally start to surface. And I don't know if you saw those quotes from people at DC and Warner Brothers about this, but I love the fact that they were saying – they were basically saying that they expect that this is going to be like – the biggest boon for them in the merchandise department that they've had in years. As if what they're saying is, all of our other properties in pop culture are so weak, even the Batman show from 50 years ago is going to outdo them.
Wow. Yeah, it's crazy. And I wonder if – so do we know – so I'm sorry. Do we know who owns the rights to them now? Because what I'm – here's mentally what I'm doing, right? Mm-hmm. I'm thinking now – does Netflix have a partnership with a subsidiary or the company that then has the rights to it? Mm. Because, you know, like Star Trek and some of those great shows, Netflix has prided themselves on getting some of these great, great television shows,
mm-hmm.
These iconic television shows where they get all the seasons. You know, and they did a big push when you got, you know, when they got Star Trek, they had every season of Star Trek, all of the Next Generation. The original, the 60s show. And I remember shelling out some big bucks to get those 1960s Star Trek DVDs, the right. remastered ones and the,
yes. like
the clamshell design. And then as soon as I got them, Netflix got them. So I was like, well, mm-hmm. you know, what am I going to go through the trouble of like hooking up a DVD player, getting this thing out and popping in a disc and then going through that menu where you got to watch the FBI warning every time and you got to
oh
wait
for my
the-
God, do people do that?
Well, you know, now the FBI, they're adding like a 2 or 3 more warnings to the front of every DVD.
Mm.
For pirates, I mean, which is absurd, right? Because
they don't
only,
watch them.
No, it
the
only
pirates hurt, go right to the menu.
It only hurts the people like you or me who are going to go and buy them, right? Mm. So we're sitting there with a purchased copy of something, and we've got to watch like 3 FBI warnings. Mm. It's absurd. Anyway, I don't want to go off on that, but anyway, my point is that yeah, you got to you know with the Star Trek, you get those weird menus. I don't know if you have those on some of your like collections where it's like the bridge of the Enterprise.
Mm.
You
know what you're talking about.
And it like takes like 10 seconds for the screen to shift down to the control panel for you then before it becomes active where then you can interact with it with the remote control. You're like,
sure.
You know what? Now I've wasted 10 minutes. I just wanted to watch this episode. And so, you know, the beauty of Netflix and sort of streaming stuff like that is I can just go right to the season, click the episode I want, hit play, and I'm done. Now, so now, will Netflix have a partnership with the company that owns the rights – to 60s Batman? So I guess that was my question. Do you know the company that owns it?
I do not know the answer to that.
Because I couldn't find it either. I was looking through
the literature. I read the articles that were out there, and nobody seemed to come out and say, these are the people that have it. Which was a little baffling, I thought. But it is very, very interesting that at last, you know, something's going to be done with this because It's been for fans of that program like us. I mean, I don't know that I would call it irritating, but it's certainly been an obvious kind of goof up that they were only ever able to market the material from the movie. You know, like that same poster that you always saw of the 4 villains, like with the Lee Merriweather Catwoman in it and stuff. Like, well, is this all we could come up with for this? Right, like one of the most identifiable television series of all time. And so I'm just glad that they got it sorted out. I'm glad that's finally happened.
Yeah. Speaking of Batman, so for Father's Day, my wife got me a couple of interesting superhero books I wanted to share with you. Now, I haven't started reading them yet, as it's one day away out from Father's Day. But have you heard of this book, Batman and Philosophy? The Dark Knight of the Soul by Mark White and Robert Arp. Apparently, they have a series of these where they look at like the philosophy of South Park, The Office, different things like that.
No.
And their belief is that Batman is the most complex character to ever appear in comic books and graphic novels. And so they explore certain works that have broadened the sort of philosophical undercurrents of the Batman mythos, everything from Batman Year One to The Dark Knight Returns. They cite them. They cite, you know, obviously deep text and stuff. So it's an academic work, I mean, which is exciting to see. One of the things that they do.
And boring, I bet.
No. So I was flipping through it, and it's fantastic because it almost reads like the DC Universe style. What were the
The Who's Who in the DC Universe?
Yes. So if you recall the Who's Who books, you know, they were like flashcard style, right? You'd have like the picture of the, you know, Reverse Flash. Mm-hmm. And then you'd have like a nice description of what the Reverse Flash and everything. So it basically asks the question, like, why are we, you know, all of these different characters? So you flip through and it has all of the characters from the 60s Batman show listed and broken down in like full multi-page write-ups on each character. Mm. So I just flipped to like the King Tut page. I was reading about, you know, King Tut and, you know, when the episode, the air date that he appears, his real name, like his motivation, like how he ties into the whole mythology of Batman. It's really, really entertaining.
Hmm.
You know, why doesn't Batman just kill the Joker if he knows that he merely will kill again and kill close friends? Like, you know, is the death of one Joker better than hundreds of innocent victims? You know, all of these sorts of things. I mean, they all permeate the book. But you can really dive through and see some of these characters. So I was getting nostalgic for the 60s Batman show as I was flipping through that section, getting to see Egghead, you know, Scarecrow, and all of these different characters. They go into the psychology and the relationship to Batman. So and just browsing, like, the Amazon reviews, that they're overwhelmingly positive. So I'm excited to... So check that out. It's called Batman and Philosophy. I'll tweet it out from our Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. We are Grizzly Bear Cafe on Twitter.
Hmm. Well, I want to talk about something else from the 1960s, but we're getting already kind of long in the tooth here. Look at this.
Yeah, you want to take a break and thank someone?
I think that perhaps we should. You know, these programs, and by that I mean the programs on the Grizzly Productions Network, like this one and others, like Daddy on Board, Mommy Beta, The Weekly Long Box, The Sports Report with Paul Roberts, etc., are only made possible or deliverable to you for free for the cost of 0 pesos because we have great show sponsors. And there's another we'd like to thank in this episode.
Indeed. Our friends over at Gazelle.com, because if you have used electronics laying around, and specifically, you know, they've narrowed their catalog of things that they accept now, you know, down to some of the bigger laptops, some of the Android phones, and some of the iOS devices that are out there, an iPad or a MacBook Pro. You know, Apple last week released their new MacBook Pro Retina display. So this is the highest end of the Apple laptop line. And so videographers, people who do a lot of video editing, photography editing in the field, who need a great new laptop. I've been testing this thing for about a week now. It is fantastic. The Retina display is astonishing. And so for photo editors who, you know, have to work on high-res images and want to see the full resolution images that they can edit, Photoshop aficionados, there's no better machine ever built than this one. And for video editors, too, there's actually no better machine ever built for video editing than this, because when you're working in Final Cut Pro, you can actually get full 1080p resolution in the window and still have all of your editing controls around the window as you're editing. So that little video box that's on your right-hand side of the screen is in full resolution, so you can see exactly what's going to appear in the finished product. Anyway, they rolled this new product out, and so a lot of people want to trade in their old laptops, you know, with their low-resolution screens, and they need to upgrade. What better place to do it than to go to Gazelle.com, and you're going to get a great value for your device. You just type in what you have, and they'll give you a quote, and then you box it up. They'll pay the shipping, and they'll even send you a check. They'll PayPal you a payment, and a little treat for you. Get 5% extra if you get an Amazon gift card. So if you choose that option, you know, and then you can buy your new laptop right on Amazon. So you're actually getting 5% more. We love them a whole lot. And we really thank them for the support of the show. When you're checking out, just tell them where you heard about them. You know, just write in the little pull-down menu, and you'll get some money for your used electronics. So good way to clean out that junk drawer of gadgets that you're not using anymore.
Mm-hmm. All these things that Clayton has said are true. I know them to be true. So I wanted to talk about something else from the 1960s that might be relevant and comes up a whole lot on this program, the Monkees.
What happened with them? Are they back together?
Now you may know one of them's dead now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you knew that. We talked about that at length when that occurred just a couple months ago when Davy Jones of the Monkees passed away, unfortunately. And there are, of course, then three surviving monkeys: Peter Tork, Mickey Dolenz, and Michael Nesmith. Mickey Dolenz is on tour. He's been on a solo tour. He also joins up with some other like one-offs from random 60s bands, like the guy from Herman's Hermits or whatever, and one of the guys from the Turtles too, I think. And does, you know, kind of like a package tour type deal. But he also performs on his own, does Mickey Dolenz. And recently, I'm not sure how recently, maybe I want to say 3 years ago, give or take, Mickey released an album, a solo album of his, and he doesn't have a lot of solo albums, where he covered all Carole King tunes. You know, Carole King was one of the staff writers in the early days of the Monkees. Some of their early hits she was a co-writer on. And of course, you know, obviously a solo artist in her own right, with monumental success. She wrote hits for James Taylor, for tons of people, right? But I had never listened to this. And perhaps feeling a little bit nostalgic when reflecting on the recent passing of Davy Jones, I hunted down, online in the iTunes store, which is where the devil lives, if you didn't catch that earlier. You can listen to free samples of every song before you buy them. And so I was just listening to some of the excerpts, and I was amazed at how much I liked this, because a lot of the stuff that the Monkees have done, since the end of the television series, so on and so forth, sometimes can be a little hokey. Sometimes it can be a little schlocky.
Are you referring to Pool It? They're in 1986.
I even like some of the songs on Pool It, but Pool It's schlocky. Like, yeah. Pool It's not cool. But this Mickey Dolenz album's really good. And as I said, they're all Carole King covers. So I was just kind of like checking around online, and, you know, right now Mickey's on tour. If you really wanted to go see him by himself, for whatever reason, and I stumbled across a bit of news that was 2 months old. In 2 months, no one told me this, that Michael Nesmith came out and made a public release saying that he is going to go back on tour, and he's going to attempt to assemble all the surviving members of the First National Band, which would be
true?
The ones that aren't Red Rhodes.
Right.
John Ware and the other guy whose name escapes me right now. He made this announcement on his Facebook page back in mid-April. And
because you're not on Facebook, you didn't even know about it.
Right. And even this isn't enough to make me – because I don't know if you know this, Clayton, about Facebook. That's where the devil lives.
So the devil's splitting his time.
Right. Well, the internet makes it easy for him to get into your house. Mm-hmm. So I heard that on 60 Minutes. So I was floored by this because over the years, he's probably been the least prolific in terms of touring. He's often come out and said that he doesn't like the experience of playing live. Even right after the initial Monkees tour, which I don't know how well you remember this story, but when I guess it was Cold Gems finally decided they had to put the Monkees on tour, they made them rehearse when they weren't taping the television show so that they could play their instruments. You know, the two, you know, Mickey and Davy couldn't play, Mike and Peter could. And that they could get their way through like an hour and a half concert without having like people hidden behind the curtain playing the instruments for them. But for their first concert, because they were really worried that the guys would bomb, that they couldn't pull it off, they had them play in Honolulu because they felt like – do you remember this? The rationale was if it bombed, nobody in mainstream USA would ever hear about it because it was in Honolulu. Well – the din of noise between the band and the audience was so loud, they heard the concert in Japan. It was an overwhelming success. Even though you can go back and you can acquire these, right? Rhino's released a couple different versions from their early concert tours. They aren't knocking it out of the park, but they get by. The Monkees do all right by themselves. And right after that first tour, which was, you know, like teen mania crazy, right? Like girls ripping Davy's clothes off on stage, that sort of thing. Nez came out and said, the other guys seem to get this almost orgasmic-like reaction from playing in front of a live audience, which I just don't get. And, you know, he's made other remarks over the years that, you know, he really doesn't enjoy that sort of thing. So the fact that he's come out and announced this, I thought, one, the fact that it took the news this long to reach me was astonishing. Two, the fact that it's happening is astonishing. But it really does seem, since the passing of Davy Jones, that he's turned a corner about the Monkees and about some of the things he's done in his career. So, just over the weekend, he's announced 3 tour dates. And, of course, they're all in Europe. true Michael Nesmith fashion, right?
Right.
Like, they couldn't be anywhere nearby. They have to be an ocean away.
So when are you going to Europe?
Right. So, of course, like, the first thing I did was, like, I had to look at my calendar, right? Because this could really be it. Like, obviously, Davies just passed away. Like, my schedule is such that I can't do it. Like, even if I had – and God knows, like, transatlantic flights are outrageous in price. Like, let's say I got hot on the Powerball tonight. Let's say I had no issue with the money. I couldn't even make it work with my schedule without canceling commitments I have to appear places. And yes, October is a long way out. These are end of October, the end of the month of October. But that to me is like the cardinal sin in what Clayton and I do. You know what I mean? To cancel a committed appearance, a booking that you have somewhere, for something that's not an emergency, I think is not a cool thing to do. You know? So I was really irritated by this. He's playing in London and Manchester, England, and Glasgow, Scotland. That's where he's playing.
So odd, because it really does – I mean, look, he's – the genre of music that he really helped cultivate, I would say, or create is how would you describe it?
Like country rock,
right? Two very American things. I don't know how well country rock plays in England.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it does. Maybe he knows he's tested the ground there, and he knows that, you know what, he's got a bigger audience in London than he does in the U.S. So maybe that's where he should do it.
Certainly, you know, his past experiences playing out live, because so many of his albums had an immense critical acclaim overseas, he's revered and respected a little bit more over there. And I've often read, you know, people who wrote reviews of his American concerts saying that, like, people would heckle him on stage. There was a famous concert where he one of the biggest crowds he ever played in front of during his solo career, you know, maybe like 9 or 10,000 people, where he was the opening act for somebody else. Midway through his set, people started chanting for Daydream Believer, which isn't a song that Mike sings, although it's a Monkees song and Mike was one of the Monkees. That's a Davy song. And he got so mad he stormed off stage and wouldn't finish his set. So maybe this is what I'm hoping, is that these are going to be some warm-up shows. He's going to see how he feels doing those. And if these go well, that maybe – because it just doesn't make sense. Like, why would he only do these three UK shows? Now, let me contrast that with this, which I know and which is very, very frustrating. When the Monkees got back together after being apart for, you know, 9 or 10 years and recorded a so-so album called Just Us, which is only them playing and writing and recording and everything else on the album. And this came out like 1996, 1997. The Monkees, all four of them back together, went out on tour. And the tour started in England, started in the United Kingdom, and then later was to come to the United States. Nesmith did all of the UK dates, and then when the tour moved back to the US, he said, "Hey, you know what? I think I'm done." So
yeah.
The show I ended up seeing had no Michael Nesmith, because for some reason, he felt really comfortable doing the stuff over in the UK, and when it came to the US, he decided he wanted nothing to do with it. So in the back of my mind is that bit of trivia, right? Like, are these really – could these really be the three last shows he ever plays live? Because if I knew that, then maybe I would think about mucking with my schedule a little bit. But I have to believe that they're like a warm-up, that this is him going a little bit off the radar, not unlike when the Monkees were sent to Honolulu to get the Kinks out of their live show. And once he's got it down pat, he's going to bring it back to the U.S. and at least play a couple major cities. And, you know, he lives in the American Southwest. He splits his time, I think, between New Mexico and California. Like, there's got to be a Los Angeles date, right? Like, there's got to be, like, an Albuquerque date or something.
Yeah. A Reno date. Yeah, maybe you're right. But then you're taking a gamble.
That's a gamble. That's what I hate about it. I know it's a gamble.
Rolling the dice.
So
now, wait, let me ask you this. Couldn't you shift something around? I mean, because you know me, right?
Mm-hmm.
I always believe that where there's a will, there's a way. Like, I don't take no for an answer.
Sure.
And so I got to think that with all the traveling you've done to Europe over the past couple of years and all of the schools and, you know, such that need you to come over there and do show and training and everything else, that you could coordinate something.
Mm-hmm. That exact thought did cross my mind, as a matter of fact. because there is a group from England that had been asking me about coming over again this year, and my schedule is just such that you know, it'd be very difficult to make it work. But this is such a rare thing. But that's the thing, it is very, very risky. And this is the other thing about him. He's also notorious for just canceling dates for no apparent reason.
I was going to say that, too. You're going to get over there, right? You're going to have everything shifted and moved. You're going to fly to England, and he's going to have, like, you know, laryngitis.
Right. Or like, my passport's expired. I'm not coming. Right. So but he is out there a lot more. Like, since the death of Davy Jones, he's done interviews where – I mean, he used to – interviews with him were far and few between or few and far between. He's just out there a lot more. And I have to think something about this has really changed his perspective on things. He's talked about the fact that this I thought was really interesting, that he said that putting Rays together, his kind of blah 2006 solo album, he said, I would never want to go through that again. He said, I'm working on something new and it'll be nothing like that. That I thought was like a really optimistic thing to hear from him. But I'm also aware, just because he has done some of these other recent interviews, and this is something that Clayton and I talk about usually around the episodes that have big round numbers, like 100 and 150 and 200, is could we attract somebody really mind-blowing to appear here on the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe? And we've pulled it off in the past. Like, certainly the one that springs to mind first and foremost is we had the chance to talk to John Flansburgh from They Might Be Giants right here on the program. But we've always run across some hurdles, right? Like, trying to cut a path to Sting is all but impossible.
Right.
Like, that guy's got so many people. His people have people.
Right.
His entourage has an entourage. Like, trying to actually get to him is, woo. Well, I happened to, while scouring around, happen to discover who Nez's publicist is that manages all of the interviews he accepts.
Wow. You've been busy.
So, you know, if we wanted an answer about is there the possibility of some North American dates to follow, there's probably nobody better to ask than Papa Nez himself.
You know, this, I'm going to store this in my mental database the next time I ask you to do like a spreadsheet or something. And you tell me you don't have time.
I don't have time because I'm working on this stuff.
Right. I'm going to go back to June 18th, 2012, and pull this episode up as evidence and proof that you're full of it. So you've collated all this information. Now, you found the publicist, and have you reached out?
No. But part of it is that I wanted to bring this to you. And that's not to say that Clayton and I only talk when we do the Grizz, but this is probably the longest continuous chunk of conversation we have each week, right?
Like, right.
We don't usually talk for a straight hour any other time. But I wanted to throw it out there because I feel like the time is right. He's out of his shell a little bit more. You know, eventually someone's going to tick him off and ruin it.
Right.
So, you know, we can't wait too long.
Yeah, I'm game.
But I think now might be the time to hunt him down.
Yeah, let's get on that. And, you know, maybe the first thing that he'll ask is be like, well, you know, I was available. I've been available for years, but you're not on Facebook. Mm-hmm. So
he's not on any other social platform. You know, he's not on Twitter. It's just his official Facebook. And there are some bogus ones, by the way. Apparently that's easy to do, as I discovered, I don't know, this couldn't have been 3 weeks ago. Someone had made a bogus Facebook page and was pretending to be me.
Oh, there you go.
So, but there is an official and a real Michael Nesmith Facebook page. I was really, really intrigued by this. And again, almost like amazed. That information had been released by him on April 15th, and here it was 2 months later, and it was only trickling to me now. But what really triggered it was, you know, then the announcement, which just came over the weekend, that he's announced these three dates in the UK.
Yeah. Fascinating. I did also get for Father's Day a trip to Roger Waters' The Wall.
Oh!
I think we've gotten to a point maybe in our lives where there are very few people we would care to see in concert, you know?
Sure.
I think when you're in high school, you're like, yeah, I'll go see that. I'll go see the Gin Blossoms.
That's crazy that you said that. That is exactly what I was going to say. The Gin Blossoms with special guest Screaming Cheetah Wheelies.
Right. Or Kind of Blue Something.
Spin Doctors. Yeah, with Deep Blue Something.
Deep Blue Something are going to play Breakfast at Tiffany's.
I do still like that song.
One and hour
I like,
and a,
I like Roll to Me by Delamitri. If we're going to talk about like early 90s one-hit wonders, I like Roll to Me by Delamitri too.
Speaking of early 90s stuff, I was listening to Seal recently. Mm. His self-titled. Are all of his albums self-titled?
Well, that I don't know. Because, you know, I'm not a big Seal fan.
iTunes is the devil. And so iTunes
right, thank you.
Difficult time figuring that out. I bought a program called TuneUp for iTunes. It's fantastic, mm-hmm. by the way.
It's dolphin safe.
It's not dolphin safe. In fact, there's dolphin parts in it.
Right, it's made of dolphin tears.
It's Dolph Lundgren safe.
I see. Thank goodness for that. It can be quite wooden. I don't know if you knew that. Let me get off on a tangent. Do you remember this happened in Allentown, PA? You and I were sitting in your car, and you played a song for me and asked me to guess who the artist was, and I incorrectly guessed Seal. Do you remember this?
We were in Allentown, PA. I mm-hmm. played a song for you.
This was about a year after Chikara Wrestle Factory opened. It was the first chance I think I had ever had to show you where the facility was.
I do remember that trip. I do. I remember where we drove, where we parked in the back, the whole thing. And I played a song for you that you incorrectly guessed as Seal. Yeah.
You said, guess who this is? And we listened to it. And at the end, I said, that's Seal. And you said, no, it's Ephraim Lewis.
Ah, yes. Ephraim Lewis with his only album, Skin.
Yep.
Tragically, you know, my friend Eric, is quite an idiot savant when it comes to music. And so he had discovered, and speaking of early 90s again, right?
Right, yeah.
It is beautiful. I mean, atmospheric.
Yeah. There's two or three songs in there I really like. Of course, the hit was Drowning in Your Eyes.
Right.
But I really like Summer Lightning is a song on there that's really good. I think what you were about to say is, under some controversy, though, he was ruled a suicide. He died right after his first album came out.
Right. I think he fell out of a window or something.
Yes. And what I only just realized over the weekend, this is why this is fresh in my mind, that happened on my birthday. March 18th was the date that happened. But did you know that there's controversy about that? That the other side of the camp is saying that the taser the police used on him is what caused him to fall out the window and die, that he did not leap out the window.
Oh, I didn't even know that the police were involved.
Yes.
I thought fell out of a balcony, fell off a balcony. That's all I remember hearing before Wikipedia was in vogue. I didn't know much more about him.
Right. But yeah, really beautiful album. But he does kind of – he sounds a little like Seal. I still think that.
He does. In fact, the album art looks like a Seal album art, you know, cover.
Right. Right. Just sort of less scarring of the face.
Right. Less sort of performance art, you know, mm-hmm. I don't know. But yeah. So I'm excited about – but I've been just listening to the – I do love that early 90s Seal stuff, you know, and there's some really good stuff that he did.
Everything pre-Kiss from a Rose I like.
Right,
where he went off the rails for.
Well, it's that album I've been listening to, though. The Kiss
the from Batman the Forever soundtrack.
Well, no, that song is on, if I'm not mistaken, it's on an album then.
Oh, probably is, yeah.
Right? Like, I think it's on, I don't have it here with this on this laptop, but I do have all my iTunes library at home. But no, what I was mentioning is the reason I sort of discovered it again is because you know how iTunes, I don't know how yours is, but most people have this issue if they have a large collection. Is that over the years, you know, you get a lot of mistagged tracks, you know, that sort of thing, or just be missing album artwork and all that sort of stuff. And it's, you know, sometimes it's just the way that the CD was formatted, it got ripped in that way, or the Grace Note audio database has it in there wrong. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, that's the problem. So there's a couple of programs you can buy that work for both Mac and PC. TuneUp Media. Folks, it's called TuneUp, just all one word, actually. And it's wonderful. And it works for – and this is a program I was telling you about, I think – or maybe I didn't. I think I might have told you about this on the phone. But it – not only it'll – first of all, it'll clean up all your library. So it cleans up – puts all the album – the proper album artwork there. It cleans up extra duplicate songs, gets rid of them using a thing called the deduper. So it'll find all your duplicate songs and it'll get rid of them for you. It'll actually put them into a playlist and remove them from your main library just in case you ever needed one of those duplicates for some reason. It's very – and basically it listens to all of your songs. That's how it recognizes it. So it's not just guessing based on like metadata. It actually physically listens to all of your music.
Physically.
Yeah, it actually uploads to their database and it actually – or their servers and it listens to it.
That's creepy.
It is kind of creepy, but it's cool. It does take a little while the first time you run it. I think it's like $20 or something to buy it, and then you never have to worry about it again. It cleans it up. But the really cool thing is it has another little sidebar. You know how you like that concert information website that you go to?
Yes, setlist.fm.
They have – it has like a sidebar that attaches to iTunes, so it kind of aligns itself with iTunes, so it's like a little extension, sticks on the side of iTunes. It has it knows like your favorite artists based on your library now because it's imported it, read it, and the whole thing. And as you're like listening to Sting or you're listening to Mike Nesmith, you hit play, it, you know, it's on the internet, so then this little sidebar sort of fills up with really cool Nez information.
Hmm.
And it has all sorts of concert information. So it'll update you in this little sidebar to your favorite artists and what their concerts are coming up, information related to the band, news that's happening. So that's why I was thinking that. Like, you might have known about this Nez information if you had TuneUp and you were listening to Nez. It would have populated that stuff on the right side of the screen and said, hey, concert dates, Mike Nesmith. You would have been like, what? It's not accurate.
That was my reaction. Believe me, when that popped up, that was my reaction. Anyway, like what? Hey, a couple other quick things from the music sphere of interest, because you know how it is. Clayton and I have talked about this. Probably the one we talk about the most is Chris Isaak. Artists where we were really heavily into him for a period of time, and then we just kind of fell out, you know? I definitely went through that with Harry Connick Jr. He had a couple albums that I really loved, then he put out some that I didn't love, and then Harry and I broke up.
Dave Matthews Band.
Yes.
Coldplay.
Yeah, well, no. Chris Botti is definitely in that boat. Now, tough to imagine. You know, later this year, he's going to turn 50.
Really?
Chris Botti, who looks like he's 29.
Right. Blonde hair, dashing.
Right. He's a handsome guy. That guy, he looks half his age. He put a new album out like a year or two ago that I never even heard of. And he was nominated for a Grammy. It was nominated for Best Instrumental.
I didn't even hear about this.
Me neither. But you see, you should be lucky that I'm out there fishing around for info like that. So, if any of you out there, loyal eggheads, these are some things I'm interested in, right? In the last, I don't know, year or two, new Chris Botti album came out. Have you heard it? I'd like to hear what you think about it. Because I was really into a couple, right? There was Night Sessions, there was A Thousand Kisses Deep, then there was like another one, and then that one that was all about Italy came out, Italia, and I was that was it, we broke up. I'd like to know if you've listened to it, what you think of it, because I could always go for a little bit more of that. Along those lines, sometimes also gets thrown into a smooth jazz bag, the Rippingtons, who I was really big into for a while. They did Black Diamond and Topaz and Life in the Tropics. They jumped the shark on me.
It's funny you asked. You just brought them up because I meant to ask you about them lately. I was like, what is going on with the Rippingtons? And right. It escaped me, but yeah.
Right. So the Rippingtons, by the way, and they are, they're typically thrown in a smooth jazz bag. And definitely, if you're not in the right frame of mind, you'd probably hear it and be like, I think this is elevator music. That is the type of stuff I like to have on in the background while I'm working because it's unobtrusive. You know, like I don't want Don't Stop Believin' on in the background because I want to get up and sing. I want something unobtrusive in the background. And Chris Botti and the Rippingtons are like two of my three go-to artists for that sort of thing. So the Rippingtons put out a new album in the last year or so, but their last two, Wild Card and the 25th anniversary one or whatever that was, 20th, they were not so good. Have you heard it? What do you think? And last but not least, I didn't realize this, and it only just got released in the U.S. but was released in Europe more than a year ago. There's a new Jamiroquai album. I really liked his album Dynamite, which had the single 7 Days in Sunny June. A time ago was a guilty pleasure song here on the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. If you've heard the new Jamiroquai album, I would like to hear what you think about that too, because I can't just go out buying these things willy-nilly.
Also, John Mayer's new record. I know you can, you know, again on iTunes, you get like a minute and a half preview, so you almost get to listen to the whole song now.
Right,
that's
kinda
kind of how it rolls. And that I haven't, you know, it's a country album. The iTunes reviews for that have not been kind. You know, out of 5 stars or whatever I think you get, it's been like 2.5, 3 stars. People are just like, you know, hey, we appreciate you trying things, but don't try a country album again. I don't know.
Do you think this is just like he's trying to date Taylor Swift?
Well, I think it could be because, you know, there was like he's been ripped, obviously, publicly for a lot of his tweets where he would like break up with a girl and then like bash them over Twitter. Mm-hmm. And people are like, that's kind of a dick move, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think he's in a bit of a PR repair right now.
Right.
And that's sort of what's reflected in this album, sort of self-reflection. But I don't know. I'm always a little – look, you don't need to wear a cowboy hat on the album cover to prove mm-hmm. that it's a country record. You know what I mean? Have you seen?
No, I didn't know. I was really cold after Battle Studies. Like that was his least interesting solo or, you know, all his stuff's been solo. Well, except for the John Mayer Trio album, Try. I didn't like Battle Studies. Like I listened to it once or twice. I was like, I could just leave it. I don't care.
All right, maybe I'm wrong. It's not on the front album cover. Maybe it's in the slip cover, but it's on – like when you go to iTunes and you'd see the picture of him as right. reflect – you know, the one that you'd click on to buy on iTunes, it has his picture with a cowboy hat on. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's inside the album. But it's called Born and Raised, music by John Mayer. And it's – I don't know. Who knows? But it's – you know, he sold 17 million albums, but it's called Southern Rock. I mean, it's sort of like the influence of Southern Rock. But some people are saying, look, this is a perfect sort of 70s Americana. And then other people are slamming it, saying, hey, don't try this. Actually, when I look at the Amazon reviews, they're all 5 stars. They're giving mm-hmm. They're praising it here. Maybe, more people buy music on iTunes than they do Amazon, but I don't know. There's not a lot of reviews here, but on iTunes, it seemed like it was like hovering around 3 stars last I checked. So, yeah. If anyone's listened to that, let us know on Twitter. We are Grizzly Bear Cafe on Twitter. Is it worth buying? Did he jump the shark as well?
Yeah, we would like to hear from you. We also have an email address, do we not, Clayton? That's grizzlybearcafe@gmail.com. Is that right?
Indeed, and you can always contact us through our website, too, at grizzlyproductions.tv. Just click on the Contact Us link, and we get some emails here and there from folks that want some info about different things, and we respond. We usually try to do it on the air is how we respond.
Right, yeah, because when we do it privately, like when Clayton and I just text it back and forth to each other, you don't hear that.
Yeah, we're too lazy to do that. Plus, Mike's got a lot of collating to do of Nesmith publicist information.
Yeah, there's a lot of collating. Yeah, it's 39 pages.
Right.
Like, I'm pretty sure after this, I could, like, trace the Russian cartel back to its – that would be easier than tracking down Michael Nesmith's publicist.
Yeah. It's going to start – that film version will star George Clooney, mm-hmm. and it'll be a Steven Soderbergh-directed film.
Yeah. And it'll just – instead of – what was that film of his, Michael Clayton? It'll just be called Michael N. Clayton.
Right. Mm-hmm. Speaking of films, we don't have time to talk about it today. But
okay, then. Bye.
I'll save it for next week. I saw Prometheus.
Oh, all right. Well, I'll be interested to talk to you about that. Yeah.
And season 2 of The Killing just wrapped up, which I'm on episode
7.
What,
after
7.
Episode 3? How many episodes were there this season?
I think it was like 13 or 14 episodes or something.
Wow,
so,
time flies.
Yeah, I just finished episode 7, so maybe in the next week or two we'll talk about season 2 of The Killing here on the show. If Mike gets up to speed, we'll see, and we'll come back to you on that one.
Yeah, I did watch since I spoke to you last, and I just had the chance to hook it up, thank goodness, so I could watch it. I got to watch the Head Cleaner for my VHS player.
Oh,
It plays for 20 minutes, and that's made by Memorex. You just put 3 drops in there, and it cleans, you know, if the tracking is scratchy.
Right.
So I'll tell you about that. We'll talk Prometheus and probably a whole lot more when Clayton and I reconvene for another Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe in about a week.
See you, kids.
Bye.